Hello, everybody, and welcome to Cracked Spines. I'm Cyrus.
I'm Sarah.
And today, I am pleased to announce we are finally unshackling ourselves from the tyranny of the intro. That's right. We have nothing to fucking say. We're just gonna jump right into it. We sat here for 5 minutes being like, surely something interesting has happened to one of us in the past week and a half, and you know what? It truly hasn't. So, we are here today to talk about Avatar The Last Airbender. There we go, we did it.
Wait, can I take one moment to talk about the intro that you rejected before even hearing what it was?
You mean the one that you were like, I have an intro and it's really bad, and I was like, that's intriguing, and you're like, it's not even good bad, it's like, just bad and boring?
Yeah.
Cool, yeah, let's hear it. That sounds like a great, great way to kick this off.
I was just gonna explain that I hit 400 hours of Stardew Valley and that I've been really getting into the farm building mechanic, where, you know, you decorate the farm more. But I realized that you made the right call, because there's nothing... Stardew Valley is the most boring video game in the world, and discussing Stardew Valley is the most boring way you can interact with it. So...
The problem is, I don't even know enough about Stardew Valley to, like, play in the space or even make fun of you.
Oh, well, Stardew Valley is a slice-of-life farming game that's about building up... Fine, we'll talk about Atla. Is that what you want? You want to talk about Avatar The Last Airbender?
Yeah, I would love to talk about the television show Avatar The Last Airbender here on our book podcast.
Every season of it is called book. Book one, book two, book three, and I read comics for it. It all holds
absolutely
together.
Flimsiest logic.
It holds together.
Who am I to judge? I made us do the autopsy nigh 2 episodes ago.
And this is not going to be the only thing we talk about, because frankly, this is just going to be a lot of 12-year-old Sarah and 30-year-old Sarah come together to discuss feelings about the same TV show. And also, you can be there.
I will be here.
But I do think there is something really remarkable about children's cartoon animated writing. Mm. Especially, like, I was thinking about it with Atla, which is a tight 22-minute episode, unless we're doing, like, a double episode.
Yeah.
Or a triple episode, or a quadruple episode, as the finale was.
Yeah, geez. Did those all air together?
I think they did.
Can you imagine how fucking infuriating that would be if they didn't? But yeah. That's also the exact kind of bullshit that a children's show would pull.
I know. But it's...
Ooh, catch it next week on Toonami. Bet you want to know whether the fireball that just exploded into the camera view is actually going to hit. Idiot. Fucking moron child.
I hope you do know that it wasn't on Toonami.
I fucking know it was not on Toonami, Sarah.
You know what? So before this episode, we're like...
I was just thinking about that.
You said something very mean to me, and I said, I'm not gonna do this podcast if you're mean to me, and you said, that's the whole fucking shtick, dipshit, and then you spat on me.
Yeah.
And we tried to figure out, I was like, which one of us is meaner to the other? And I think I was correct when I said, I think you're meaner to me, but I think I'm more condescending to you.
Yeah, I think this was pretty conclusive evidence.
It's just that, like, it aired on Nickelodeon, and it was, like, a really big part of the Nickelodeon brand identity. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Is there a Nickelodeon ad before every single...
Yes.
That's so funny. Every single time, and every single time I'm like, ah, god damn it, we didn't skip it soon enough and we have to watch this goddamn thing. And it never even penetrated past my short-term memory.
You just saw the kid kickflipping every episode at the beginning of Netflix, kickflipping off a giant roll of toilet paper.
And I was just yes, Disney Channel, probably.
The loudest music in the world fucking blares out.
Oh yeah, Toonami. We all remember that, the intro to Toonami, where a little kid does a skateboard trick off a roll of toilet paper.
Yeah, and then he gets slimed.
We all thought the robot from Toonami was, like, really cool, right? Yeah. Like, maybe a little sexy.
We can't drag. You know what? I actually am. It is tangentially related. Do you remember how you had a crazy crush on Kovu from Lion
Not
King 2?
Not a crazy crush. Like, we all had a crush on Kovu. That's normal.
Like an insane, vulnerable, really, like, revealing crush about you.
It was a perfectly normal crush on Kovu the lion from Lion King. I was 8.
Lion King 2.
Whatever.
I think it's...
They made him weirdly hot.
And then they have that really, like, inexplicably good song in Lion King 2 that's like, deception.
Yeah, we all know
disgrace.
That song.
Though my parents also listen to this podcast, so I like to provide an overabundance of information so that they know not to be proud of me.
I think they know.
Anyway, deception.
Hi, Jackie.
Deception, disgrace. We're also going to talk about the Zuko redemption arc.
Oh my god, that's an amazing transition.
I know, right?
Fucking 10 out of 10. Eat your heart out, Sarah's brother Matt, who always critiques our transitions.
By which I mean once.
Is this too much of a deep cut of, like, shout-outs to your family?
Well, we literally talked before this episode about our specific friends' reaction to specific episodes. This is not a, broadcasted thing. This is basically, I don't want to maintain a Facebook page,
this
so I made
Christmas
a podcast
letter. Oh boy. Anyways, yes, once again, masterful transition. 10 out of 10.
Yeah.
Everybody wishes that they could be Kovu and or Zuko.
Dude. Okay, so I guess we should maybe explain what Avatar The Last Airbender is.
I think people
know. Yeah, here's the thing. I think people do know.
We all saw the M. Night Shyamalan movie.
Yeah, and that's our a cultural touch point for it. There was at one point I pitched we could watch that movie for this podcast. I don't want to watch that fucking movie.
I don't even remember you saying that. I think I just...
No, I decided not to pitch it at all because I didn't want to make it an option.
Yeah, that's really funny.
But yeah, since I have been insanely into Avatar lately...
I was going to actually ask what inspired you to start watching it again.
Truly? No idea. I have no idea. It's just like every, you know, where you're just like, I guess it's Avatar time, baby. I was thinking about the TV show, and I was like, it was a combination of two things. Like, well, I have very fond memory of it, and I didn't know if it held up.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the sort of thing that as we went on this like month-long rewatch of it, I realized that I'd really underestimated the degree to which like Atla is like a cultural force.
Mm-hmm.
Like, not like, you know, it's not like fucking Marvel or anything, but like, once you're like, I am looking for Atla in casual conversations, it's fucking everywhere. There's merch for it everywhere. This TV show ended like 20 years ago, and everyone's just like, we still love it a lot.
Yeah, and it's like the kind of thing where it's like, rather than the kind of Marvel effect where like, I feel like you see it so many places because of all the money that's been poured into it, Atla is everywhere because it was genuinely just so fucking good.
Yeah.
And I think it absolutely held up to my memories of it as a kid.
I really, really enjoyed it. I
mean, I should fucking hope we enjoyed it, given that we watched all 3 seasons of it.
Yes. So, but in case you don't know what Avatar The Last Airbender is, it is an animated TV show that aired for 3 seasons on Nickelodeon when I was at a young and very impressionable portion of my life.
And I was like 15, which was like less young and impressionable, but it still hit.
You watched it on DVD, not as it was there. The age gap between us is not so extreme that you were 5 years younger, older than me at the same time it aired.
Yes. Sorry. Yeah.
Yeah. You watched them on Netflix one at a time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
DVD by DVD.
That's how I did Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
God.
Anyways, sucks.
Yeah. It does suck to watch things on DVD. Fucking bullshit. Fucking dog shit anecdote. Cut that, future Sarah. No one cares about how it sucks to watch things on DVD. You get 4 episodes and then you have to wait. It's almost worse. Just 1 episode and waiting is better.
Okay, again, not to immediately sidetrack into other things I was interested in childhood.
Please sidetrack.
But as we are doing this, I remember I watched Buffy season 1 and Buffy season 2 on DVD, which my mother owned. And I was like, the end of Buffy season 2, she's like, had to kill the love of her life, who is a fucking 200-year-old man who loves a 15-year-old, but whatever.
Let's move on. We can't get stuck on that. Wonderful World of Whedon, etc.
And I'm like, mother, I know season 3 DVDs are out. Let's get them for me. And mom was like, no, we're not going to do that. I was like, why not? And I don't, to this day, mom, you made me wait like a whole summer so that I could get the DVDs for season 3. And I don't understand why.
Just to make you fucking thirsty for it. Really make you beg.
It'll make me beg for it. Avatar The Last Airbender is an animated cartoon that is about war and genocide and going on a fun road trip with all of your friends.
And jokes about meat.
And jokes about meat and being sarcastic. And horrific child abuse. And not one, but 2 animal companions picked up in the first 3 episodes. It is a wonder that the show is not a tonal nightmare.
Yeah, it's like genuinely really impressive.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, we made so many jokes throughout the entire show where, like, you know, a fucking thing would explode and we'd be like, they're all dead. And then it would show, like, you know, the people, like, falling and then, like, landing in the water and being like, oh, we're all safe. And it's kind of like,
dead. You're dead.
It's like, yeah, we see what you're doing, Toonami. Yeah. Like, if this was on Toonami, they'd be actually dead.
It was, I feel like they wouldn't have gone to the sheer effort that Nickelodeon went to show people not being dead. Because it's one thing to ambiguously kill people, which happens on this show, which again, stars children from 12 to 16, in a war zone trying to end a 100-year-long war, and one of them has, like, the greatest destiny of all. It's, like, one thing to, like, show people, like, to show a ship exploding. Mm-hmm. It's another thing to then show the people on the ground being like, wow, I can't believe we got out of the ship on time.
Yeah. Oh, man.
It is a show aimed at children.
Yes. And yeah, it's, it, you know, in our one of our episodes where you were reading a lot of children's lit, you were also talking about how it they grappled with, like, really fucking dark themes. Yeah. And I think that's, like, a really interesting thing about children's lit is the is the ability to tell a story about something that is, like, deeply serious without it feeling like a, I don't know, this is going to sound bad, but a slog, you know?
I think that there is, so many fairy tales are so dark and sad.
Yeah.
It's, like, built into children's stories of, like, we want, like, I think horror is so important to children because a lot of stuff is scary and they don't understand what's happening. And so, like, the controlled titillation of horror, which has, there's, like, some elements of Atlas, like, that's, like, the spirit world can be kind of horrific.
Oh, yeah. Fucking Ko, the face stealer? Yeah. Terrifying.
Yeah.
You know, I love that shit.
I love that shit.
Yeah.
Oh, it was so good. I remember as a kid, I didn't understand why my mom couldn't read A Series of Unfortunate Events, the book series, because I was like, it's good, it's well written, it's funny. And she's like, it's not funny, it's a deeply sad story of endless suffering for children. And me, a child, being like, oh, mom. And revisiting it as an adult, or The Hunger Games, or any of, like, any of these books, I'm just like, oh, I'm experiencing it in a notably different way than I did the first time around. Like, this time around, like, as a kid, I'm like, oh my god, Zuko's a fucking bad boy. Zuko's a tragic boy with, like, a ninja background. Whoa, that's crazy, dude. And, like, now I'm like,
he's 16 and he has the saddest life. Okay, not the saddest life. We could, I suppose, start litigating who has the saddest life, as some people in the fandom apparently have done.
Oh, there is no toxic fandom like a child's cartoon fandom.
God.
But yeah, just, like, watching it and watching the episode where it's, like, the idea of, like, 100 adults watching the leader of your nation mutilate his child.
Yeah.
And then everyone just being like, all right, back to work, you know, it's like, I was like, wow, that is very sad in a way that it wasn't to me. Or Aang, the last airbender, discovering he is the only known survivor of the genocide of his people.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, wow, that's actually also really sad. Mm-hmm. A lot of the stuff that happens on this show is, like, much sadder than it was when I was a kid and was just like, I would love to punch fireballs.
Yeah. Okay, but, like, which bender did you want to be when
you were a kid? So I put a lot of thought into it in, like, the last month. I could never come to a conclusion as a child, but I think I'm either water or air. Mm-hmm. And I think I might lean a little bit more towards air because, you know, like, I'm kind of, like, more of that, like, pacifist bullshit. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm in, like, that final episode being like, I really hope Aang doesn't have to kill Ozai.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When I was a kid, I obviously wanted to be a fucking firebender because that shit rules. But now that I'm older, I'm like, you know what? You know who's the most overpowered benders? The fucking earthbenders.
You are also real earthbender vibes.
Yeah, I agree, honestly.
And I feel like if you're earthbender, then it works real well for me to be airbender.
Hell yeah.
Are you my Toph?
Oh, God, yes. I want to be Toph so badly. She's so fucking cool.
She's so cool.
Also, okay, so speaking of cool female characters on this show, so many of them, it does great by its female characters. Not always, like, the best, I guess, but, like, you know, But I mean, I'm not, I think that it's more like looking back on it from like both the standards of an adult and the standards of today. You know, I feel like it does some interesting things where like Katara can sometimes fit the kind of like, oh, you're like the mother character that a lot of female characters get shoehorned into. But the show's also self-aware of that. And it's like, yeah, she literally became that figure because their mother was killed when they were children and she had to like grow up too fast.
Yeah. And also, she's so mad all the time. I know, yeah. She is the maddest member of Team Avatar, and it's delightful.
Yeah. But anyways, I was just going to say that watching this again now as an adult and every scene with Azula, I'm just like, oh my god, this just fucking did so much damage to me as a little fucking tween. Like,
talking about the secondary antagonists of the show, where it's like season one, you have Zhao, who is there to make Zuko look more tolerable. And you're like, yeah, Zuko's a real little twerp. But Zhao is like the flattest caricature of a dickhead ever. I'm saying that. I love him.
Zhao is
I
an
love
adult
him.
Man with a rivalry with a teenager.
That started apparently when he was 13, because he's at Zuko's Agni Kai going, yeah!
Oh my god.
Genuinely, absolutely delightful to see, like, the narrative role Zhao plays. And again, that sort of efficiency of storytelling. How does Zuko maintain being a threat, but not be the main threat of the season? Oh, we have just a shittier guy who's also an adult, because this is a TV show.
And also, Zuko is so, like, he's so much, you know?
So much. And then season two, like, the escalation of the threat to be like, okay, Zuko is now going to be doing, not going to be actively chasing down the Avatar every moment of his fucking life. Mm-hmm. And to bring in his, like, 14-year-old prodigy sister to, again, take on that role of, like, here's the season's main antagonist.
Yeah.
It was really fascinating to watch the pragmatic nuts and bolts of, again, a show that has a lot of episodes that are, as Sokka canonically describes it, like, stupid time-wasting. But also, like, a very efficient show.
Yeah, I mean, the whole span of the show in-universe is, like, a fucking year or less,
Oh,
right?
I think it's less.
That's fucking crazy.
Yeah.
They're all so young. Yeah. But yeah, you know, kind of on the subject of Zuko, I really do feel like Zuko is the fucking archetype for a, like,
Kylo Ren wishes.
I know. And it's so interesting because, again, it's like, this is, like, in a way, the perfect villain redemption arc in a children's television show. You know? And I don't know. I feel like it's, I'm trying to think of what makes it so perfect. Mm-hmm. And I feel like, A, it's that at the beginning, Zuko does feel like a genuine antagonist.
Yeah.
But
he's so dramatically evil in season one sometimes.
He sucks. Like, he sucks.
Yeah.
And so it's like, it doesn't feel like he's like watered down so that you are like, so that the narrative is trying to make you like him more.
Yeah.
To like prep you to like, kind of like to start liking him even more later. But he's also not so evil that you're like, I can't really like excuse this.
Well, I feel like there's like that moment where in like episode one, he arrives and he has this massive industrial ship that destroys the ice wall of this small village, you know?
Yeah.
And then in like episode four, we see his ship pull into like dock and next to every other ship in the Fire Nation and be like, oh, his ship sucks.
Yeah.
Oh, he's also a little underdog.
Yeah. And I think, you know, so you get the idea that Zuko is by no means the like big fish in the villain world. And I think also another really important component is Iroh, his uncle, who is like this, like, I don't know, just the fucking sweetest old man who is a perfect foil for Zuko's extremely fucking aggro energy. And again, I say that like he's valid to be super angry and upset all the time.
Even at Iroh, who's pretty fucking stupid sometimes. Iroh being like, if we don't begin our fugitive run with a massage at our spa, I'll die.
I love him. But yeah, it's like the kind of the tension between Zuko and Iroh really makes Zuko feel like it's like a great comedy beat that also makes Zuko feel more like human, but not in a way where like he's still it feels like the kind of like, you know, villain side patter that you would get. So it doesn't I think that I guess what I'm trying to say is that I think that season one of Atla does a great job of actually establishing Zuko as an antagonist that doesn't feel like it's leading you directly to him getting a redemption. So the redemption does feel genuinely kind of unexpected, and therefore it feels like more hard won in a way that I think a lot of times when, you know, you can when it's telegraphed from the very beginning that they're like, this bad character is going to become good, you're kind of like, cool, well, you know, there goes the tension.
I think there is something too about, because I'm thinking in a sort of similar arc, in a way, Spike on Buffy the Vampire Slayer, as I watched those two around the same time in my life, which is also a wild juxtaposition. But there's this part, and it's not an every villain redemption arc that works, but I think it works well a lot, which is you gotta make them funny.
They gotta be pathetic.
They have to fucking, they have to get the fucking shit kicked out of them, either physically or metaphorically, or they have, like, the humbling has to be
absolutely
intense, and they have to be, like, receptive to the humbling.
Yeah, they have to be like, yeah, I deserve this.
It's also really great. It's like, I think Zuko has the best individual character arc on the show. And I don't think other characters don't get to go on as flashy or, frankly, like, fun of a journey.
Sokka's like, I go from just being the meat guy to having a sword. That's my character arc.
He also learned about feminism.
I'm so proud of him. That was a single episode in season one. That doesn't count as character arc.
I know.
He just, like, a light bulb went off in his head that was just said, like, oh, women rule, actually.
Yeah, that light bulb was Suki kicking his ass.
Yeah.
So that Toph like, didn't kill him next season.
God.
Although I would like to point out, Suki is like a feminist because she loves other women. Toph is like a strong woman who hates other women.
Toph is fucking Margaret Thatcher. I'm kidding. I feel bad about even making that joke.
Every time she calls Aang Twinkle Toes, I'm like, I know it's not a gay slur. She just sounds like, she sounds like your mean dyke friend.
God, I know. I would love fucking adult Toph to be meanly homophobic at me.
God. Toph experiencing whatever the fuck gender experience she was having during the Ember Island Players, where she is played by an adult man who screams at people. Which I just realized now as an adult is, like, because... Oh, I assume the reason is because they talk at the beginning that they have this whole episode where they, like, put on an in-universe play that the characters watch, which I think is a delightful convention. I love when...
And it's the episode before the entire finale.
It recaps the entire show. Nuts. But I realized, like, watching it this time, I was like, oh, they say at the beginning they gathered all the information of the play from interviews with, like, people who had seen the Avatar and the gang, and it's like, it's just that everyone's lying about getting beaten by a blind 12-year-old girl.
Oh, that's so funny.
I think that's the, like...
I never thought about that.
They're just like, ah, yeah, I got the shit kicked out of me by an adult man.
That's amazing. I never thought about that, but that makes total sense. God, yeah.
She's so good. They had to nerf her in the finale so that she wouldn't solve the problem instantly.
Yeah,
the only reason they had airships is so that Toph wouldn't fucking...
Yeah, just kill the fucking Fire Lord with no questions.
No questions! If she had been Avatar, Ozai would have been dead by episode 7, but there still would have been as many episodes.
Yep.
And it would have been her causing problems.
Yeah. Avatar if Toph had a gun.
Somehow longer?
Yeah.
But we should talk about it. I would like to talk about an element of the show that I don't think works. And I want you to know, I went in, I think way more than you. I went in being like, I'm... Katara and Aang are canon.
That's crazy.
I'm going to try to enjoy the fact that they are canon.
Okay.
And it didn't work.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, because sometimes you can make the art, you can be like, well, this is what the show is. You know, this is what ended up happening. If that's what ended up happening, then okay, I can figure out a way to like it. Mm-hmm. I don't hate the idea of it, but Aang is so consistently, and this is not an insult to him because he's fucking 12 years old, he's so immature.
Yeah.
And it really feels like Katara gets saddled with this immaturity. Yeah.
Like, sorry, not to interrupt, but like...
Yeah. No, this is what talking about Atla is. It's talking about how much you don't like ships.
Yeah, excellent. Great. That's, God, so true.
Let's dox some 15-year-olds.
God, the fucking... From the same franchise that brought us the feudal lord and handmaiden dynamic and the we poppin' the biggest bottles.
We poppin' the biggest bottles, though, is like the opposite feeling, I feel like, of like what happened with Katang. Katang is when the Makora shippers were popping the biggest bottles.
Yeah, God. But yeah, it's like I think Aang is an interesting character because he's a 12-year-old and very much feels like a 12-year-old who is also, like, the most powerful person in the entire fucking world and the person who has to save the world. And I think that's a really interesting piece of tension. But once again, Katara is, like, so grown up in, like, her, the way that she kind of, like, acts with the other. I mean, she really is, like, the grown-up of the group, you know? And it just feels to me... really dissonant to be like this character and this character, especially because it's like, I don't know, I feel like the gap between a 14-year-old and a 12-year-old is just so fucking vast.
They're drawn differently. Aang's voice actor sounds like a child and Katara's voice actress sounds like an older teen.
Yeah.
You know, there's like a thousand things where it just feels incongruous. It feels like in Gravity Falls and then Dipper is like, oh, it'd be crazy if I guess I'm not gonna get with this 16-year-old. And the 16-year-old's like, yeah, you're super not.
Yeah.
You know? And I think I have no issue because, okay, so I think there's a strong argument to be said for, like, Aang reminding Katara that she is still a kid.
Yeah, you but know? I just didn't really get any of that in the show. Like, that would have been cool, but, like, you know, instead it just kind of feels like Katara continues to, like, wrangle him the way that she's always wrangling Sokka.
Yeah. I don't think Zutara had to happen. In fact, I'm weirdly into Zuko and Mei's extremely toxic.
God, they suck! They suck!
They suck, and also weak as hell to have them get together off screen.
I know. Yeah, God. There are so many things about season 3 that it's like,
I think season 3 is the weakest of the three.
I agree, which is a shame. Yeah. And it's like, I don't think, like, the ship stuff...
Sorry, book 3.
Yes, because this is a book podcast, of course. I don't think that the ship stuff, like, decreased my enjoyment of the show notably, but it did feel like such a, like, weird choice. Yeah. Where, for me, Katuko was absolutely, unquestionably where things were going.
Katuko?
Yeah, that's what the ship is. You know, Katara and Zuko.
Yeah,
Katuko.
I mean, you're right. Also, the show was clearly setting up Zuko and Sokka.
Yeah, you're
they
right.
They couldn't have less thematic resonance.
It's just the teen boyness of it all.
And again, I've said to you repeatedly, on this rewatch, I was stunned by how much I was like, yeah, it's Zuko and Sokka for me. Because it's almost this freedom of like, well, it clearly wasn't going to become canon. Mm-hmm. Didn't occur to me until the year 2020 when the, like, Atla Renaissance hit Netflix and everyone's just like, Sokka and Zuko. And I was like, shut the fuck up. You guys are just afraid of Zutara. Wow, I really have some feelings I've sublimated from being 12 years old. The fact that they have truly are just teen boys standing next to each other works 1,000 times better for me in the concept of I remind you that you are, in fact, a teen.
Yeah.
And, like, a child, a youth.
Yeah.
Than I mean, Katang.
Yeah, I can totally see that because, like, again, Sokka is very immature, and Zuko is another character who is, like, extremely grown up before his time.
But you know? Also...
But also you're insane, just to be clear.
Oh, no, that was also... No, Zuko has had a lot of stuff happen to him. Mm. I think he has such strong teen boy calling you a slur on Xbox Live while punching a fucking wall.
Zuko? Yes. Yeah, I can see that.
Zuko feels... Oh, he feels so young to me now as an adult.
Yeah, God, absolutely.
And it's like, it's been delightful. I've been like, he's my son.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been really interesting watching it again, like, no longer being the character's ages.
Yeah.
But yeah, just to circle back to Katuko really quickly.
Katuko sounds viscerally wrong, but...
Why? What's wrong with it?
I don't know. It just doesn't sound right, and all the listeners are gonna agree.
You're just afraid of the power of Katuko.
You're afraid of the power of Zuka. Zaka? I'm having a stroke. Tell me more about Katuko.
Katuko. Yeah, see, it's catching on.
It's not.
I was so dead certain when I was watching it as a wee 15-year-old that they were going to be Endgame. I know a lot of people were.
Yeah.
I, like, tried to, like, basically go into the fucking dark web and be like, did somebody, like, fucking pay off the writers to be like, actually, I, Elon Musk, really ship Katang? You know, as an extremely immature man-child, I think that there should be more representation. But yeah, it was, like, genuinely so baffling to me that the two of them wouldn't get together, specifically because of those thematic resonances,
It feels media literate to look at their interactions and to be like, this feels shippy.
Yeah.
This feels like they're trying to set up a relation, at the very least, a relationship that is, had more potential than was necessarily shown on screen.
Yeah.
And which leads me to my third point? Have I made any points? Which leads me to my point. There should have been a fourth book.
Yes. God, yeah. I would love a, like,
oops,
you know.
All Zuko in the gang season?
I mean,
that's
yes,
what I want.
Yes, absolutely. Like, it is a fucking crime that we only got how many episodes?
Like six.
It's so, Zuko being with the gang.
Yeah.
Like, that's such a good part of the show, and it is genuinely so sad that, that we didn't get more of that, because it felt like, in many ways, that's, like, what Zuko's character arc was leading up to, you know? We were robbed. But yeah, God, I would have loved this is not like a show that would exist, but like a, like 10 years or so in the future, even like longer than that. And just like, you know, what are these kids up to when they are adults? And like, how is it different? Because they were dealing with adult stuff when they were kids. And so how
what an incredible segue. Good news about the comics.
Oh, interesting.
The comics takes place. So I read three different ones that'll be in the description. One was part one. One was Lost Stories, which has just like comics that take place during the show. But the other two are sequels. Mm-hmm. The Pact and The Promise, I believe, are the ones that I have. And literally The Promise is like, cool. TV show ended. Zuko's terrified of being assassinated in his castle where he lives by himself. Also, he's grappling with, like, how do you uproot a 100-year-old colony without essentially displacing people from now their generational home? Mm-hmm. But it's a generational home that was the result of conquest.
Yeah.
And, it was... It's not... I don't want that TV show. Mm-hmm. It's like reading the comics, I'm like, I'm astonished by how in tone these are and how much like canon they feel.
Yeah.
But these were not, I want way more of the ones that are like, here's just extra adventures that took place during the time of the show.
That makes sense.
I don't want Zuko the Fire Lord. It actually bums me out that
he
has to become it.
It's so sad. Like, they should. God, none of them should have to deal with any responsibilities ever again.
I know, but then it's like, I'm impressed the show really does support some, like, robust, like, fun political arguments you can make about it, too. Or just, like, it feels like you can do, like, well, Iroh can't take over because Iroh is just going to be, like, you know, they can't have peace under Iroh. It's going to look like a continuation of the old regime, you know?
Yeah.
And it's, but also Iroh every day should wake up and thank his fucking lucky stars that he got narratively coded as a hero, because he, the idea of retiring to the city that you laid siege on for 2 years is narratively delicious. And I also believe that he's a political prisoner in Ba Sing Se. What were your... You weren't originally, I believe, joining me on the Atla rewatch. I just sort of sucked you into it, I think.
Yeah, I mean, because again, I really liked the show as a kid. It was like, I don't know, I can't put a finger on how it was formative in the same way that it's hard to say.
Every time Azula came on screen, you went, oh, yeah.
Oh, evil lady.
Evil lady.
Little tween. God, she's so evil and I love her so much. It's a good thing that we never, there was never like a sequel where they're adults, because I once again would have had to be horny about a cartoon. I wasn't horny about Kovu. I was 8. We were all like, wow, he's really cool.
Whoa, his, like, lion muscles are rippling.
I fucking hate you.
It's okay. I had fucking Robin Hood, the fox.
The fox, yeah.
Yeah.
That's, like, more normal, I think.
But it is normal.
He's more anthro. Oh, so you're saying yours is not normal?
Whatever, fuck off.
Every child's a furry.
Yes, thank you. You understand. Also, furries are fine. It's fine to be a furry. Why are we litigating this?
Some of us are brave enough to keep with it.
Ah, oh, boy. But yeah, I think I just ended up being kind of like, yeah, sure, I'll fuck with that, and then kind of got sucked into it, because I was like, ah, shit, this is really good, yeah. And it's really fun to kind of, like, retrace the journey that I went on as a kid. Oh my god, I have a very funny story to tell you that I just remembered. So I'm pretty sure I told you this, but... you know, you're not the only one in the room right now, so...
You're talking to Scurvy now.
Scurvy doesn't know this story. So, when I was a kid first watching Atla, obviously, like, anyone watching Atla for the first time as a kid, I was super obsessed with Zuko, and so I started, like, typing into YouTube, you know, Zuko, and the first thing that came up, in the, like, autofill was Zuko tribute video, and I was like, oh my god, he dies at the end of the show! Oh my god, it's a tribute to him because he dies! I guess spoilers for Atla, he super doesn't, as you might have intuited by the fact that he becomes Fire Lord. And so, you know, I probably saw that at like the end of season 2. For the entirety of season 3, I was just like, I'm so fucking sad that Zuko dies. Like, every time that he's on screen, I'm just like, this is such good content, and I can't believe that it's going to end with his death. I'm just grappling with this in my little kid brain, like, oh my god. You get to the finale, Zuko is having this truly epic battle with Azula that, like, as we were watching it, you're like, they're not gonna be able to top this in live action. Like, the animation is truly exquisite.
They were it's off so the good. Shits for their animation yeah, for some of these fight choreographies.
Amazing. Like, I think the fight between... Because we kept saying with the fight between Aang and Fire Lord Ozai, like,
the most Dragon Ball
of it all. Yeah. But God, the fight between Zuko and Azula was, like, so intense, so beautiful.
And the music is so sad. The music is, like, it's so sad these two kids are fighting to the death.
It's so... And the music's, like, it's so sad that Zuko, your favorite character, is literally about to die right now. I was literally, as we were watching that, that's what made me remember that. Because I was like, oh my God, I was watching this and I was like, no, it's finally happening. And then, as we all know, you know, Zuko gets like badly injured
protecting Katara,
because Katuko should have been canon.
And Katara does what she always has to do during this series, which is clean up someone else's fucking mess.
She does a great job, and honestly, like, that fight scene. Not honestly, I didn't even remember the stuff between Zuko and Azula. I remember the fight scene with Katara and Azula,
which is weirdly short. Yeah, I mean, it's like Katara solves it pretty quickly.
Yeah, and it's like in such a cool way where she, like, you know, freezes them both in this block of ice and then melts it so that she can, you know, bind Azula and that kind of thing. It's like really fucking cool. But anyways, I remember, like, after that scene, I kept being like, is Zuko gonna, like, die of his wounds? Is Zuko gonna get, like, hit by a falling anvil? And then I got to the end of the thing, and I was like, what the fuck? And I watched it up, and it was just a tribute video because I liked the character.
Would you say that enhanced or diminished your experience of the show?
Unclear, but it certainly added an emotion that would not otherwise have been there. God, I'm honestly, I feel like my main takeaway watching the show again was, and again, this is not a hot take, was truly just like, God, I wish that Zuko and Katara had gotten together at the end. It feels kind of weird to, like, still be invested in a, like, ship dynamic in a children's TV show, but I was just like, oh, it, like, meant so much to me as a kid, and, like, I'm watching it as an adult and being like, the narrative is so delicious! It was right in front of your faces!
It was so, oh, it would have been the parallels! The narrative parallels!
And, like, as I was looking up, like, hey, why didn't this happen? And again, I didn't find any conclusive evidence, apparently. It's just kind of like, yeah, they just didn't want it to. And I'm like, can't relate, but okay! And yeah, I, like, saw, like, you know, and all the, dug into the forums with all the people arguing, gotta love that. And people being like, yeah, I just, like, never saw how, like, I just never saw the, you know...
You never saw the Katuko potential?
I literally can't remember what the actual ship name is now. The Zutara, thank God. Okay, that was really scary for a second there. they're just like, yeah, I could just never really see Zutara. Like, it just never registered as a shippy thing to me. And I'm like, hey, what? What? Did we watch a different show? What did you see that made you be like Katara and Aang, actually? Because clearly I missed that, so...
There's, like... There are moments, again, so I wish I could be more positive about it. I, in general, when a ship becomes canon, and it just is what it is, I do try to just be like, this is an aspect of the text, mm-hmm. so I might as well engage with it as best I can and, like, find enjoyment for it. And it's, I don't dislike their interactions, but I just don't get any romance at all, even in the shippy scenes.
Yeah, like, you know, somebody
this
was
is
like,
crazy, we were talking about the shipping so much. What does Avatar do to you as a person?
I don't know. What do they put in it? But yeah, it's like, you know, somebody was like, yeah, you know, Aang and Katara get all these scenes, they, like, dance together, they, like, blush at each other. I'm like, yeah, because they, like, wrote those to be the scenes, but there was, like, in my opinion, nothing that, like, they were, like, built on. You know, it was, this is, I feel bad saying this, but, like, Katang feels so much like compulsory heterosexuality to me, mm-hmm. in a way where, like, yeah, I know the fucking alternative is also heterosexual, but isn't fucking Katuko queering heterosexuality? Is Katara not Zuko's feudal lord? Is Zuko not a handmaiden?
And I think the part of it too is that it really does a detriment to Aang's character, because it feels like he is blindly idolized this person, mm-hmm. And is scratching my fucking rug.
Stop it. Go away. God, she doesn't give a fuck about me.
It feels like Aang, like, imprinted on the first person he saw.
Yes.
After a very traumatic experience, and which got reinforced as she, like, offers him love and support during even more traumatic experiences.
Yeah, yeah.
But it doesn't ever feel like her feelings are changing. It feels like she's getting worn down.
Yeah, absolutely. And it feels very much like, you know, the hero gets the girl, and that's just how it works. It feels very much like, yeah, Aang wants to be with Katara, and Aang is the hero, mm-hmm. so Aang's gonna get what he wants in the end, you know? And again, it's like, that's not a criticism of Aang. He's a fucking 12-year-old.
Yeah.
Like, but, you know, it did just feel like the writers taking the path of least resistance.
Mm-hmm.
I can see how there could be arguments like, oh yeah, like, you know, Katara and Zuko would have, like, way more to overcome,
mm-hmm.
because, like, they...
That's fun, though!
Exactly! That's what makes it good!
But anyway, I don't think, actually, there should have been any. And this is my genuine opinion. I don't think the show should have had ships.
Yes, I agree. I
think
actually
it should have ended with, like, I think...
Because they're kids!
Because they're kids! And at best, it should have Zuko and Mei breaking up in the finale and then getting back together also in the finale.
Yes! That would have been so good! Oh my god.
I want...
Also, May, I don't think should be, is not, I think, the fire lady the nation needs in this time of healing.
Yeah.
May committed a lot of war crimes through sheer apathy and boredom.
Yeah. Oh, man.
At least, like, Ozai cared about his war crimes.
At least Ozai was actively evil.
Yeah.
You know, gotta give it. You know, they do hate to see a girl boss winning.
God forbid women do anything, you know?
God forbid Mark Hamill do anything.
Mark Hamill might have been he might be too evil sounding as Ozai. But Ozai is like, I think...
I'm sorry. Did the fucking villain who wants to overtake the entire world in a TV show for 12-year-olds seem a little too over-fucking evil? Was it a bit of a caricature for you?
There's, like, the interesting thing where the entire finale really revolves in ways, like, how is Aang gonna not kill Ozai? Which I think the reason the book 3, I think, suffers a lot is that it has a lot of really cool questions and a lot of really cool ideas that have to get addressed in one episode.
Yeah.
Because I think there is an extremely powerful statement to be made by the last airbender, the survivor of a genocide, figuring out how he's going to prevent a genocide conducted in the exact same way.
Yeah.
That he wasn't there to stop the first one, but he is here to stop this one. But, like, the idea is, like, not only is he going to stop the death of these people in the way that he couldn't for his own nation, but that, like, he's gonna do it while honoring the values of his nation.
Yeah.
And refusing to surrender that. And it would have been really good if there'd been more space for it.
Yeah.
Because Zuko doesn't tell them until 2 days before the eclipse that his dad's gonna do the biggest war crime since the last war crime.
Yeah. That was a wild choice, Zuko.
But the finale did have a good proper Zuko and Aang fuck around. Where they fucking chase each other, blast and fire. Season 1, I think, is the strongest for me.
Yeah.
And a great deal of that is Aang is at his best interacting with Zuko, I think.
Yeah, that it is really good. It's the fucking, I can't even remember what the Zuko-Aang ship name is. Zang?
It's the Zang of it all.
Yeah, there we go.
Zukang?
It's bad.
It's bad. But genuinely, and it's like, there's something to be there for, like, the extreme pacifist monk and the angriest teen boy you'll ever meet.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, God, there's just so many interesting character dynamics in this show.
Yeah.
Which, unfortunately, it's, I think, very easy in a fandom sense to boil that down to who should have gotten together.
Yes.
But it's like, and I think that you're spot on in the sense of, like, I think the show would have actually massively benefited from not trying to put any of the characters together, because again, they are children in the middle of a fucking war who are literally trying to save the world, and also by, like, you kind of, like, lose something by, like, trying to distill these relationships into a, like, who gets together kind of question.
It's really to the detriment of the show that the last shot is Katara and Aang kissing.
Yeah.
Because even if that had not been the last shot, and the last shot had been, like, all the friends out on the balcony joining them after the kiss, I think it would have been less of a sour note to end on.
Yeah.
It's hard when it's... there was this interesting medical study Mom was telling me about when we were talking about, like, pain in nursing and perceptions of pain in nursing. When you're doing stuff like wound care. And the idea of, like, people rate experiences better if the ending was less painful. If you end on a better note, it is remembered as being less painful than if it ends on a painful note. So even if it's, like, you're at, like, an 8 throughout, but the last 5 minutes of your wound care is a 4. Mm. That's viewed as a better experience than being a 6 the entire time.
Mm. That's interesting.
Because it's like, that's what you walk away with. And that's why I think, you know, when you see endings that are so good, like, there's a lot. I like Avatar a lot, but it really, I think, kind of fumbled some aspects of its finale. Not all.
Yeah.
The fight choreography is fucking amazing. Yeah. And I thought they did a joked about, we joked about nerfing tough, but I thought they did a fantastic job of giving everyone stuff to do that felt really tailored to who they were without also being condescending to Sokka and Suki, the non-benders.
Yeah.
Sokka and Suki, who have the biggest kill count?
Yeah! God. Well, you know, no one died.
Because
they all made it out just in time.
Just in time. You didn't see them, you didn't see the soldiers paratrooping out of the 12 the exploding zeppelins.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Anyways, I think we all know that the real ultimate relationship in Atla was clearly going to be Toph and Azula. There's something
there.
What
a long walk to nothing.
Yeah, there's something there.
Also, it's Azula and Ty Lee.
Okay, I mean, you're correct, but that's just canon.
What if, okay, sincere question. What if Aang in season 2 had pivoted and, or something had happened, and it's Aang and Toph is endgame.
I mean, again, I don't really see that, because Toph is a baby lesbian. But I would have still, like, that still would have made more sense to me, and again, it's like, they are just more, like, on the same maturity level, because they are closer in age. Like, that to me was, like, Aang is just written so much like a kid, you know? And, like, it's just really hard to be, like, when you're...
He's written as a kid, he's drawn as a kid, he's voiced as a kid. He's really, really childlike.
Yeah. And it's, again, it's, like, kind of... I mean, I didn't fucking... I was, like...
I was also 12 when I was watching it.
Yeah, well, I was just gonna say, like, I feel like I am maybe biased because, like, I didn't start even thinking about relationships until, like... late into, like, senior year of high school when I was like, oh shit, is it weird that, like, I haven't dated anyone? I should probably, like, try to do something about that. And so part of me is like, 12-year-olds don't fucking think about that stuff, but, like, I realize that's not everybody's experience.
Yeah, I've truly been thinking about lately, it's just like, wow, I am so tremendously less interested in romantic relationships IRL. I like when you give me two little dolls to play with and I make them smooch. Mm-hmm. And that's what Atla does.
Yeah.
But also, they shouldn't have smooched. They should have all done one big group hug.
They should have ended it on a freeze frame of them all jumping up in the air. God, that would have been great.
They should have ended it with a zoom in on Sokka's picture of them.
Aw, that would have been great.
Yeah.
It would have been a really bad picture.
It would have been a really bad picture.
I mean, I guess we see the picture. It is really bad.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
God. I am, so it is why I am genuinely excited for the live action show to a degree that surprises me, by which I mean, I'm looking forward to seeing the trailer. It's like, I'm not, like, sitting here, like, creaming my jorts over the prospect of the show, but I am genuinely intrigued by the idea of the showrunners having another go at it.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I'll be curious to see how they handle the tone, because I feel like it's so much easier to hit that, like, we're all having a good time, and also a little bit of genocide, and we're still having a good time, but when it's live action.
And so much of the humor of Atla is this cartoony humor.
Yeah, the, like, animation.
Yeah, the rubber faces, the fucking arms. Sokka in live action would suck so hard without any adjustments.
Yeah.
But he's also my son.
Yeah. Yeah, I am very curious to see how they adapt it. I don't necessarily think it will be good, so...
I'm not, overwhelmed with hope.
Yeah.
But I am intrigued, but less so every day I Google it to see if there's a release date, and there's just, like, not.
Yeah.
But they did, I can't remember the name of the actor that they did for, Ozai, but they got a real dilf.
Okay, let's just pull
I think it's Daniel Day Kim.
Was that the guy from, the other dilf character?
You must know how many dilfs we see.
Oh, that guy, okay. yeah, he's hot. Anyways, this is fucking nothing. Why does his jaw do that?
Brutal. What's his jaw do? Be like,
goes like, he's got. Like, it's not like a bad thing. It's just like, are you sorry? His jaw is a fucking outie.
Are you confused by the fact that he has a chiseled jaw?
Yeah, they chiseled a little too much.
Michelangelo went a little too hard in.
Anyways, yes, 10 out of 10. Very dilfy.
All right. Final thoughts on Atla.
Good show.
Good show. Truly, if I. The scene with Iroh and Zuko in the finale is like an all-timer.
When they hug?
When they hug.
Yeah.
Make me cry.
It's really good.
It's so good.
Oh, God, I love their relationship so much.
I know. It's like, Iroh is, as an adult, I have, like, more complicated feelings about Iroh than I did as a kid.
But he's still such a great character,
He's such a great, fantastic character. Yeah. And I don't think it's a problem that he, like, narratively-wise, it's fucking delicious for him to be a refugee in the city that he tried to invade, and then he reclaims that city for the Earth Kingdom. Like, it's narratively juicy. But it is also just, like, watching, again, the Agni Kai, flashback with Zuko getting his face burned off by his father, and Iroh is the one telling the story, and Iroh was like, I looked away. And it's like, what else could you have done? But it is, like, this, I don't know, this interesting thing to be, like, he is complicit in the, like, abuse and power of this entire nation. And not just complicit, but actively engaged in it.
Yeah, absolutely. And, like, it feels less complicated when you're a kid and watching it and you don't fully understand, like, the implications and the ramifications of what Iroh is saying.
Yeah.
Because, like, you don't see Iroh doing anything, like, actually all that bad. Yeah. But then you're kind of, you, like, hear about it and, like, you know, if you're a little fucking kid and you don't understand how war crimes work, it might not fully sink in.
It's really good. I wish, there was, like, times where I'm like, I wish I was less predictable and not, like, so enthusiastically doing this as a Zuko rewatch.
Really? But did every time that something embarrassing happened to Zuko, me leaning up and be like, hey, look, Zuko's really embarrassed right now.
Did you see how often during Zuko scenes I was just, like, partially covering my face?
Yes, absolutely.
I love him.
Yeah.
I think he's so good. A superbly written character.
He honestly is. And yeah, you know, I think my final takeaway from Atla is that, like, this is, like, a show that, again, just kind of became part of my psyche. You know, there are just, like, so many excellent moments of it that I still think about seeing when I was younger and that being like, oh my god, I didn't know you could do that with stories, you know?
There's literally, like, times where we'd be watching the fight choreography and I would be like, this is what my daydreams look like.
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't realize... I love re-encountering. See, you're not a rereader. This is why you should reread shit. Mm-hmm. Because you'll see things and you'll be like, I didn't realize how this molded the shape of my head.
Yeah.
Until I come back and look at it again.
Yeah, absolutely.
Anyway, this has been Cracked Spines. You can follow us on Instagram at Cracked Spines Pod. You can email us at crackspinespodcast@gmail.com. You can send us money to put our cat into a little box so she stops running around. I don't know actually where you can... Patreon.com?
Just send it to our physical address. You know where we live.
Hey, a lot of you do.
And our music was performed by Snow Ghost. Thank you, Snow Ghost. Brr. Woo.
A snow ghost is what Zuko would have been if Aang hadn't been like, at the end of season one, let's not leave him in this frozen tundra to die. That part in season two where Iroh is just yelling at him, being like, you don't have any plans ever. You just do shit. And it's stupid.
Yeah, hey, Iroh, didn't you get captured by the Earth Nation because you fell asleep in a hot tub? Really fucking getting on your high horse about that one. Oh, I'm sorry, on your high fucking
horsadillo.
Yeah.
Do you know what we're doing next week?
Yeah, and next week we have an exciting episode in which I mansplain the first four books of the Stormlight Archives to you. Scare me, Jesus Christ!
Sorry, guys, she's hyped.
Yeah, the switch was flipped from sleepy to silly.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to finally understanding what it's about and seeing if I should in any way... Hey, actually, spoilers, I'm never gonna read the Stormlight Archives.
And hey, I don't think I'm gonna finish it. But we'll see. It keeps pulling me back in.
Fucking Sanderson.
Fucking sexless Sanderson.
Sexless Sanderson. Is that our last line?
No, I don't want it to be. Sexy Sanderson.
Zuko here. He's autistic, right?
I mean, yeah, super. Yeah.
And Azula is too.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
And I love that for them.
It really, like, made me think about myself.
And I love that for you.
Diagnosing myself. Self-diagnosing as autistic because I related to Zuko from Atla too much.
I mean, if it gets the job done.